Good evening. This is your word of mouth news for Friday, December the 18th, 2009. It is 1 minute after six. My name is Kristen Schwartz.
And I'm Susie Alvarez. And today is International Migrants Day. On this day in 1990, the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families. In just a few minutes, local activists from the No One Is Illegal crew will be in the studios with coverage of migrant justice issues in Toronto.
And then at 6:30, we'll be hearing from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, who hosts the second half of tonight's Word of Mouth show. So that's what you're looking at for the next hour. Starting off, of course, with the headlines.
That's right. And this comes to us thanks in part to various alternative news sources.
And some mainstream ones as well, because, especially the Guardian Weekly, which has been covering the climate change conference in Copenhagen, Denmark, with a lot of attention. I was glued to their blog all day as they were providing regular updates of what was happening. So we're going to try and recap a little bit what's happened today and all this past couple of weeks at those very important negotiations. So it was announced within the past hour that some kind of deal had been reached between the United States, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa in an attempt to salvage what's appeared to be a complete failure in negotiations over the past 2 weeks. And the agreement reiterates the goal of limiting the increase in global temperatures by 2 degrees Celsius and the goal of 80% reductions in greenhouse gases by 2050. The agreement dropped any interim goals and any commitment to conclude a binding international treaty by the end of 2010. Those were both on the table coming into the conference, so there's actually been a step back from even the not very ambitious goals 2 weeks ago. An official with the Obama administration conceded that it is not sufficient to combat the threat of climate change, but it's an important first step.
And to recap the events of the past 2 weeks, we turn to a synopsis that was shared by Martin Lloyd of Greenpeace. He writes, quote, "At the start of the year, the game plan for success when it came to getting a fair, ambitious, and binding agreement looked like this. One, rich countries needed to show they were serious by offering significant and guaranteed funds to support action by the developing world. Two, the developing world will then have the confidence to commit to action. Three, which will let rich nations commit to stronger action. Four, the handful of holdout nations will then face a world united for climate action. Happy ending for everybody." Unquote. And as the talks started, despite 2 years of negotiation, there was almost no progress to report. Only a series of commitments from the developing world, all conditional on the rich countries coming up with the money. So what happened?
On the first day of the conference, this according to Martin Lloyd of Greenpeace in a very helpful recap, on the first day, South Africa joined India, China, Mexico, Brazil, and Indonesia in tabling commitments as the big developing world countries call the bluff of the rich nations. On the second day, after years of negotiating a UN agreement, a plan by Denmark to introduce an alternative greenwash sort of text was leaked to the media. The Danes, it seemed, just wanted a deal that said Copenhagen at the top. They didn't care whether or not it would save the climate.
Tokyo out the window, Copenhagen gets in. So then we go to day three, where despite Tuvalu having met all the requirements for their proposals for a legally binding deal to be discussed, their request is refused. Tuvalu and their supporters in the developing world bring the main negotiations to a halt until everyone agrees to play by the rules. On day four, Tuvalu asked for a group to be set up to discuss amendments to the Kyoto Protocol. Again, they're turned down by those who fear a binding deal, and another portion of the negotiations is halted. And then that brings us to day five, when negotiations resume on all fronts as rich nations realize they can't steamroll the poor countries.
And so things were looking a little bit more optimistic as they sort of got down to business. On day six, the negotiators took a rest as the global day of action swept around the world. 100,000 people took to the streets in Copenhagen, and millions joined events around the world, including in Toronto. piling more pressure onto the talks. Day seven, according to Martin Lloyd, was round one to Tuvalu. A legally binding deal is back on the table as it appears that the Danes have given up on their alternative text when a promised update failed to appear. Battle lines, however, had been clearly drawn. On one side, the nations who know that only a binding deal will deliver results, and on the other side, everyone else.
And then on day eight, do they never learn? Again, the Danes try to sideline discussions on Kyoto. This time, it is the African nations who walk out. The EU, Australia, and Japan retaliate by refusing to discuss their own commitments, more lost hours. In the four sessions, it becomes clear that everyone except the Americans and Colombians want a deal that won't end up subsidizing forest destruction. Worryingly, the amount of forest nations are talking about saving is being talked down.
Day nine, as the world's environment ministers arrive, the summit goes into high-level mode. Unfortunately, the efforts by the Danes and others to avoid discussion of the Kyoto Protocol mean there's a huge amount of work to be done. So this sort of explains why it was that there was, like, nothing really on the table and, you know, nothing, like, talks going into overtime and just huge distances between the players. I mean, just in terms of negotiations, this explains why so much time was wasted. At day 10, with heads of state due to arrive, everything is up in the air. There hasn't been enough progress, and the heads of state are going to have to earn their money, says Martin Lloyd.
And then finally, on day 11, there's some movement. Hillary Clinton saves the day by proposing a fund worth $100 billion a year to support developing countries. It's a number, but there's no detail on where the money will come from. China responds by signaling that it is now prepared to talk about how its own commitments will be monitored, possibly removing a major block to a deal. The USA is still refusing to talk about a binding deal. As the heads of state prepare for their state dinner, President Lula of Brazil and Sarkozy of France request that an evening meeting is convened to make progress.
And so the negotiations continued all last night and through today and probably on this evening. So again, as was announced in the last hour or so, there is something on the table now from the United States, China, India, South Africa, and Brazil. And there's been people looking at that all day, but no indication yet how that's going to be received by the 180-some-odd other countries who are at the conference and presumably are still there, as the head of the UN asked that the heads of state not leave. So, you know, another thing that we should note, of course, is that today Canada received the Colossal Fossil of the Year Award from the Climate Action Network, and given its opposition to any meaningful progress being made throughout the conference. And
It is a shame. I mean, it's a shame that they're receiving this award, just as it was a shame that Obama received that Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, as you read the updates from Greenpeace, it's just a big scripted, you know, soap opera. And obviously not much progress, I think, will come out of these negotiations. It seems that the developing nations will not get what they're demanding, and it will always be the developed world that will, you know, decide how, you know, climate change or climate action takes a shape or a form, and who will be, you know, the most affected by whatever happens, the repercussions.
Mm-hmm. So that concludes the sort of main international story that we have today. I think actually we should probably skip the rest of the headlines we got here and just go straight to a very important announcement that Susie's going
to
bring.
Yeah, it's an announcement that came to us via the Toronto Women's Bookstore and their allies, and I think many women and progressive people in Toronto were in shock and saddened by the sudden message that we received in our inboxes just recently announcing that the Toronto Women's Bookstore is in deep financial crisis and they may face closure in a not-so-distant future. Apparently, the economic downturn has hit hard small and independent businesses, which count mainly with the support of their communities and patrons. There are no bailouts or subsidies for independent and community-minded nonprofits and for-profits around these woods. So That is something that is for certain. So where the government and municipalities fail to support the adequate and healthy economic development of a city, which includes establishments that are ethically and community-minded, then I guess us as the community, we need to step in and help as much as we can to make sure that these essential parts of our cities and lives remain open and in business. So the Toronto Women's Bookstore has been around for 36 years, and it is an important note that we make that we come together and we make sure that they survive these hard times and live to see a 37th birthday and many, many years to come after that. TWB is one of the only remaining nonprofit feminist bookstores in North America and is a fountain of information and activist hub, offering a wide range of events, courses, workshops, community resources, and additional services, all at a reasonable and accessible cost. The goal for the TWB to keep operations running for the next 3 months is $40,000, and they're approaching the community and asking for donations and help in any way we can. Every little bit counts, so consider contributing $10, $20, $30 or more. You can visit their website, which is www.womensbookstore.com. There's a PayPal link available coming up pretty soon. You can visit them in person. They're located at Harvard and Spadina on the southwest corner. They are asking for people to come in, to make a donation, to shop during this holiday season, and to help, you know, keep this amazing part of our community alive and with their doors open and operational for years to come. So please make sure to visit www.womensbookstore.com and find out how you can get involved and how you can support them.
And that's it for the first part of this word of mouth news. We're going to go out with some of a track called Run Against the Elements, Design Against the Elements. This is in support of a project to get architects all over the world to design the next environmentally sustainable and climate adaptive village for the Philippines. So it's a number of Filipino artists who have come together to put together this song. So when we come back, it'll be No One Is Illegal, honoring International Migrants Day. Stay tuned. This is Word of Mouth News on CKLN 88.1 FM.
You are listening to No One Is Illegal.